Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Of Earth, if you can hear my voice, you arrived at episode number 75 of Breakfast with Brent Pope, and my guest today has to be great, and he is actor, writer, John Dreska. You've seen this dude on shows like Call Me Cat, All American, Roadies. We're going to talk all about that, and that's not all. We go back in the sketch world. We've done some sketch for a long time, and we also had breakfast at a Thai food joint, Rotted. It was good. So let's go. We have John Dreska today on Breakfast.
Welcome to Breakfast with Brent Pope.
Breakfast.
This young lady just smashed the lids on all these cakes in the bakery section.
I could go on a Hallmark card.
My guest today.
Oh, I'm going to need to hear all about that.
I didn't need any extra sausage.
He adds character to my crew.
Is a goat pit a real thing?
What? Welcome to Breakfast with Brent Pope.
Great place to hang out and good food, too. I'm always playing blue-collar guys.
Breakfast. Somebody screwed through the pipe.
I wouldn't jump up and down until we stabilized the hydraulics.
I love a cruller. All my uncles got the gout. Jalapeno / cheddar waffles.
Who doesn't love that? It's breakfast time.
Breakfast.
The only show where bacon, pancakes, Hollywood. I'm your host, Brent Pope.
I was not told that I have to be great for this.
Can we get John's agent on the phone, please?
Not the booking manager. I said agent. Thank you. John Dreska, welcome to the tiny studio LA in beautiful North Hollywood, California.
Thank you. Happy to be here. This is a good setup.
Thank you. Well, now that we've paused the show and talked to your booking agent, you're singing a different tune than you were a minute ago, sir.
No, I just you said somebody's got to be great for the 75th anniversary and our 75th show, and all I was told to do was show up today. So,
well, I think it's implied I'm not going to be great. Someone's got to be you.
All right. There's a whole mental maelstrom going on now, right at the top of this whole process. All right, we have to fight through this.
Well, you and I met at the Iowa West. We've done a lot of sketch comedy together. Yeah. And competing against each other, and as odd as that seems in the sketch world.
That was a long time ago, but those were the glory days.
Some of the most fun times I've had doing comedy, you know, and that was when I couldn't even get like a TV audition, you know, at all.
Oh, yeah.
But I was having fun.
It was, I mean, it's an overdone, cliche that's a really pat on the back, but those were kind of the quote unquote punk rock days.
Oh.
Of the LA sketch scene. Because that was before the established sketch program at Iowa West, if you'll recall. That, you know, we were doing those cage matches and those tournament competitions in like 2009 and 2010.
Yeah.
So it was a totally different beast. It was super duper indie back then.
Mm-hmm. You had a group called Moon County.
Yeah.
I never asked you this. Is Moon County a county? What's the name? What's the origin of that name? Or is it a non sequitur?
It's a fairly non sequitur. It was, you know, we were throwing ideas around. I guess we liked the ring of Moon County, and we were thinking of calling ourselves the Moon County Confederacy. And even back in 2007, somebody was smart enough to be like, you know, maybe we shouldn't have the Confederacy.
Maybe not
part.
The Confederacy.
That might just send the wrong message because none of us are like that. And so I don't know. We landed on Moon County, and I think it helped. You know, a lot of the guys from that crew, we all met at Indiana University, and a lot of guys were from Indiana. And I think if I could venture a guess, I think that spoke to a lot of our Midwestern roots. We just kind of liked that vibe that Moon County evoked.
Yeah.
And I think we had grand plans of if we became a Kids in the Hall type thing, that was going to be kind of the hook of our show. All of the sketches were going to take place in this like fictional place.
That's smart and interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, it had a good ring to it. I mean, you remember it.
Yeah.
12 years
it sounds
later,
cool. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. The other ones were like, there were really good groups. And I was like, the name's not really
catchy though, right?
Valid, yeah, or kind of self-serving.
Yeah, or like some kind of really bad pun that doesn't work.
Oh, yeah, heavy on the puns.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Hey, so you mentioned the Midwest. Did you grow up in Illinois?
Yeah, so I was born in Fort Wayne, Indiana, born and baptized, that's about it. And then until I was about 9, I lived in a somewhat small city in Ohio called Defiance, Ohio. But both my parents are from Chicago and, you know, most of my family's there. So when I was 9, they moved us back to Cook County, and I grew up in a suburb called Berwyn, Illinois, which is like just on the city limits. I went to high school in Chicago and that sort of thing. So,
well, there's such a rich, especially improv comedy scene in Chicago, actually all comedy in Chicago, really. Living in that kind of part of the United States, was that a big influence on you becoming a comedian?
You know, I can't say it did. You know, I saw a Second City show here and there when I was in high school.
Yeah.
I jumped at the chance to join the improv club in high school, which was actually, it was a classmate's father knew a thing or two about Second City. So he was our, you know, sort of instructor. This is a little sad. I remember when Chris Farley died, it felt like, you know, he was one of us, you know, like everybody knew that he kind of got his start in Chicago, even though he was really kind of a Madison, Wisconsin boy. So, you know, I was aware of it, but no, I can't say I was strongly inspired or influenced by that presence in Chicago. Chicago's just so big, you know, it's hard for a kid, even with access to public transit, to go to, you know, what are essentially nightclubs, you know, on a regular basis.
Yeah.
So
I was going to ask you, so you had the improv club in high school. Was that something where you were just kind of learning improv at your own school, or was something where you were like doing improv with other schools also?
Yeah, it was just super basic. You know, I at the time I thought there was like two rules of improv, you know, no denying, no questions. You know, that was the extent of the teaching. And then we did a ton of scene work. And it was basically, so to answer your question, we had one show at the end of the year in-house. So it was an intramural thing. But it was born out of that Second City tradition of you improvise a ton to eventually hone in on good concepts or good situations or good characters that you then sort of build out in kind of an unscripted sketch type review. We never had paper scripts, but we definitely, by the time we were doing our quote unquote improv shows, we knew what bits we were going to be doing.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like using improv, almost like writing a skeleton of a script.
I guess it was throwing a lot of stuff at the wall.
Yeah.
And then whatever stuck, we just had to kind of like, I'm sure someone was taking notes or something, but we just had to kind of remember what were our favorite things we saw over the course of the year, the semester. Yeah. So backtracking to eighth grade is where it all began for me. We had a talent show in eighth grade, and you know, I wasn't like a class clown or even considered myself funny, but I was doing impressions of teachers for a while, you know, behind their back to my friends.
Great way to become popular in high school, by the way, with the other students. It's a great way.
Yeah, no doubt. So I decided to do that for the talent show in eighth grade, and I was also sort of like an MC. So I had these impressions peppered throughout the show when we did it at the end of eighth grade. And my very first, you know, impression I got up there, I was doing my gym teacher. He had a beard. I had a big fake beard on. I step out from behind the curtain and I do my voice. You know, I go, "Hello, children." And it was like crickets. I'm like,
"Oh no."
800 kids just staring at me. And I'm like, "Oh my God. I'm not funny. I'm bombing. They don't get it. How do they not get it?" But I have no choice to just keep going with my bit. And my next bit is I introduce who I am. So I go, "It's time for gym class. I'm Mr. Johnson." And the whole fucking place just erupted.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh," and I remember this very vividly. It hit me. It was like a realization. I was like, "Oh shit, this is what I'm good at.
Yeah.
Oh, this is what I'm meant to do for the rest of my life." Because even as a 14-year-old, I was already having these like existential, you know, wanderings of like, "Well, who am I? You know, what am I?" And then later that summer, the summer between eighth and ninth grade, I came to Southern California and visited some family, and I saw Universal Studios and the Hollywood sign, all that shit. So I got seduced by Los Angeles and also inspired by the art itself. So by the time I got to high school and I found out about this improv class or this improv club, it was a no-brainer. I was absolutely gonna do it. I mean, to this day, I prefer sketch. I prefer the preparation and the acting aspects of that. Yeah, that improv club was formative, certainly.
So you saw that you went to Universal Studios and you're like writing in your journal, like, "I will be
in this Waterworld show.
I was staying in Valencia with my aunt and uncle, and I was like, Valencia, it's so luxurious. It's so close to everything.
I don't know. The first time I ever went to Universal Studios, I went as an adult, totally, but I still thought, man, it'd be super fun to be one of these tram drivers that, like, given the tours.
Yeah.
And they all have their own little spin on. They're almost like Southwest Airlines people that do the announcements. They put their own little spin on it. I always thought that'd be super fun. And I actually have known quite a few of my friends who are actors that did that as a job at one time.
Yeah.
John Dreska, we have to talk about this. There's a handful of guys I know that have actually flown out to SNL, Saturday Night Live, to audition.
Yeah.
Which is a big deal. There's kind of like your friends that have done that, and then all your friends that haven't. it's a status symbol. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whether you think it is or not.
It's a big deal. Yeah, it's a big deal.
Tell me about that.
This was in 2014. So at the time I was with an agency that was pretty much just getting me out for commercials. And proving that all of Hollywood is nepotism, a friend of a friend kind of reached out to me out of the blue. He was at APA, the agency, and he said, hey, have you thought about making an SNL video? And I kind of blew him off a little bit. I was like, I don't really do impressions. I don't even watch the show that much. You know, I don't think I said no thanks, but I kind of demurred. And then a couple weeks later, he emailed me again. He hit me up and he was like, so anyway, make an SNL video, make it less than 5 minutes and make it kind of like this. And he sent me a link to one of his clients' videos. So luckily, at this point in my life, I'm 29 years old. I'm like fairly complacent. I'm still like, quote unquote, living the dream of just like doing live comedy and like drinking a lot. So I was like, you know what? I got this guy on my side somehow. I should probably do this. So anyway, I threw this video together. I got it to him. He shipped it to SNL. Then they wanted to see me at the Live Los Angeles showcase, which they used to do every year. And for many years, they did it at the IO West. I think there was a little bit in the back of my mind that made me feel very comfortable and confident just because I knew that physical space so well. Anyway, that happened. And then I got the call that they wanted to fly me to New York, to Studio 8H. So I went. I had tickets to see the White Sox play the Giants in San Francisco for the exact same days. So I had to bail on those tickets. You know, they flew us in on a Tuesday. The audition was on a Wednesday and, flew us out on Thursday. So that Wednesday, you know, you go up to the floor. You know, we've probably all seen those hallways in some of those host bits where they're walking through. Yeah. So they shoved me into a green room. There was a cheese platter there, a little bit of time in makeup. There wasn't much for them to do to me. And then I believe I was the first person to audition. I think there were 16 or 18 or 20 folks there. And I went up first in the afternoon, about 3 p.m. or so, and did my shtick. There was, so it was like on the stage, you know, where the host stands every week. And one big TV camera, like right in front of me. And then a couple tables off to the side where there was maybe, to my recollection, maybe only like 8 folks or so, like less than a dozen. And Lorne was kind of lurking underneath a lamp. I caught like a glimpse of his visage out of the corner of my eye. And then I was going through a total kind of mental meltdown. I was like, oh my God. I was actually thinking about the talent show in 8th grade. I was like, oh my God, like, what am I doing here? Do I deserve this? How can I possibly be here? What the hell is happening to me? You know, like just kind of spiraling. And then for the first time in my life, and this has only happened to me twice, the other time was a couple of years later when I was proposing to my wife, but this sense of pure presence came over me.
Yeah.
Like my past evaporated and my future was meaningless. And all I had was like my own skin that I was inside of.
Wow.
So it was this very zen-like presence. And the guy working the camera kind of like called action. And I went into my shtick and I killed it, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
I wouldn't change a single thing about it. And anyway, I went back to my green room. They were going to let me know if they wanted to see anything else. So I sat around for like another half hour or so. And then they said, you know, you're free to go. So I was out of there by probably like 4:35 in the afternoon. Yeah. And then, you know, that was that. Obviously, I didn't get hired. That was the year they hired Pete Davidson, was the only person who got hired that year. So, but it was cool, you know. And then that guy, that friend of a friend who pushed me to audition in the first place, ended up becoming my agent proper. And I had, you know, pretty solid representation for about 5 years. But yeah, that was, I mean, frankly, like you were saying a minute ago, that is probably the coolest thing I've done, even though I didn't get the job,
right?
You know, because it is a pretty big deal to get that call. So,
well, let me ask you this. When you're done with your audition and you leave the building, what do you do?
I had a friend from high school who lived in New York. One of my best friends from high school, he picked me up, and I had actually spent about 7 months not drinking alcohol.
Yeah.
And we went out and partied that night. We partied pretty hard. So I think we went to a joint called Jimmy's Corner, which was like an old boxing bar. And then my buddy took me to, I think this place is called McSorley's, which has been...
Boxing bar? Where they watch boxing?
Yeah, just a place where they appreciate boxing.
Okay,
you know, pictures of boxers on the wall and stuff. And then we went to, I think McSorley's is the name of this pub that has been open since 1850. Abraham Lincoln gave a speech there one time.
Wow.
It's kind of like a must-drink spot if you imbibe, so... Yeah, so I raged. I went crazy and kind of partied like the good old days.
I think that's an appropriate thing to do after you've done that because it's stressful.
Yeah, I'm not mad at it. I mean, at the time, I wasn't like committed to sobriety or, you know, I wasn't like violating, you know, a 12-step program or something.
Yeah,
I had just kind of abstained from drinking for a while.
So, gotcha.
So that was, that's how I kind of celebrated.
Wow. I mean, think about this. If you had booked that show, you'd be getting hassled on Twitter by Kanye West right now.
Who knows? Yeah, you gotta, it's cheesy as hell, but you gotta have that mentality of like, you know, it wasn't meant to be, or, you know, when God closes a door, he opens a window or whatever,
right.
You know, sometimes he opens a trap door, but whatever.
I've never heard that. That's good.
Without that, you know, who knows? I'm still on my path here. So, we're still trucking.
Right. Well, look, congrats on going out there. I think it's an accomplishment in and of itself. And it's always interesting stories you hear, like, and it's never the same.
Yeah, no doubt.
There are some similar elements sometimes.
Yeah.
Like someone that's on the show now told me that when they were in their dressing room, they turned on the monitor so that she was forced to watch the people go before her or something.
Oh.
And then she's like, hey, is this normal? And they're like, oh, sorry about that. But it was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I didn't get screwed with.
Yeah.
I didn't have any props. I didn't have any audio cues. I only had me. But I've heard that, too. Yeah. They'll give you a chair with a wobbly leg, or they'll miscue your audio cue or something, just to see how you handle that sort of thing.
Well, let me ask you this. Did you have this mustache when you auditioned?
I do not believe I did.
Okay. Because I could have seen them being like, hey, let's mess with him in this way. And then they see the mustache and like, never mind. Don't.
but
you didn't have the mustache.
Maybe they did mess with me, but I was so present. I didn't even, I was unflapped or unfazed.
That would be great if they did. And you just like weren't even like, this is not even on my radar right now. I'm so focused.
Maybe. I was sort of in that zone. So
it's a great story.
Yeah, thanks. It's cool. Yeah, it's neat to talk about it. So
yeah,
I appreciate you asking.
I just saw you on All American.
Yes.
I was not familiar with that show. It's on the CW.
Yeah.
I guess the first three seasons are on Netflix now, so a lot of people are kind of discovering it.
Yes.
It was a pretty interesting show, I thought. Basically about a guy that's like an athlete in high school, right? Kind of transitioning into college.
I think he's a phenom. Yeah.
He's really good.
It's in their fourth season. So up until basically the episode I was in, I think they were in high school dealing with, you know, high school drama and that sort of thing.
So you had to play this guy who was swindling people, I guess. I don't know how he was a landlord that was kind of bait and switching people on what the apartment was. I believe
in the show I'm referred to as a scam artist slumlord.
Okay.
Which really kind of sums it up.
Well, there you go.
But yeah, a shady, you know, real estate landlord guy.
So when you're auditioning for that, you know, how are you preparing for that? And how was the audition process for that?
Well, as I recall, that was a super short turnaround. It might have been a same day, actually.
Really?
And it was a self-tape in the COVID era, so which I prefer personally.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, I mean, part of the struggle for me is finding somebody who's going to read with me. I got to memorize my lines, obviously, and get my act together. But I also am doing, you know, some outreach and juggling my emails and that sort of thing. So, you know, it wasn't a huge amount of lines or a big batch of sides. And I'm pretty good at memorizing. So I memorized it and I lined somebody up. My friend Julia helped me read. And then my only thing is I didn't know much about the show at all. So I looked it up a little bit and I kind of realized who I was, which was a big thing I learned in a class I took a few years ago about auditioning is like, look at the page numbers. Look at where you're appearing in this episode. Mm-hmm. And also know, you know, look up the actors, know who you're acting opposite. And I realized it's a predominantly, you know, black cast and it's younger actors. And you know, so I'm an older white dude. So I'm going to be in this position kind of power or implied power. And there wasn't anything in the script about any sort of like racist or racial undertones. Right. But if I'm being perfectly honest, you know, there's nothing really more villainous than that. Yeah. So I let that sort of infect my thinking a little bit, just in sort of the kind of, you know, my tone, you know, I was a little shitty. I was a little snide and snarky when I was talking, you know, to these people in the audition. And who knows if that's what got the lock for me. But yeah, I kind of embraced the villainy a little bit. And it was a little indulgent. You know, I played a little less grounded, let's say. I kind of embraced, you know, I don't want to say the cartoonishness of it, but I really, I just relished being evil.
Yeah. Well, you know, what I felt from you, yeah, that's true. What I felt was real coming from you also was just the whole, I'm an adult and you guys are like kids and like, you know, you don't know anything kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. In that regard, it was easy to kind of find what they were looking for. You know, a lot of it was sort of, as you just alluded to, it was a lot of default power dynamics that made it, you know, I had to do less work mentally so I could just focus on, you know, my emotions and, you know, delivering the lines.
Where do they shoot that show?
The Warner Brothers lot. The first scene where we're actually in like the crappy apartment was in one of those like false brownstones.
Okay.
That's like on like the fake New York Street or whatever. And that was cool to me because I've taken the tour and I've been on that lot many times for work or for auditions. Yeah. And I always thought those things were just like straight up facades.
Yeah.
But a few of them actually have interiors as well. So that was neat. That's one of my favorite parts of booking gigs is just seeing like the bowels of the castle. You know?
Yeah.
I was shooting Call Me Cat about a year ago, and I had a big break between a few of my scenes, and I don't know if it was really kosher, but I just like walked onto the lot, like the part of the lot that usually those trams go around.
Yeah.
And I was just trying doors and going into, you know, Old West saloons and like 1940s diners. And I was just kind of like snooping around for fun.
I mean, I did this. I worked on my scene got cut, but I worked on American Auto this season.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was shooting, well, at least where I had to go get my COVID test because, you know, you have to do all those COVID tests for you. It was almost right next to that famous monster arch where like Frankenstein comes through and like the Hunchback of Notre Dame and all those things. So I definitely went up there and like was taking pictures in front of that because that's something you see on the tour too, right? You're like, this is the famous door that opens and Frankenstein's monster comes through and, you know. Yeah. And then we were also shooting up on Wisteria Lane, which is like where they, what was that show? Desperate Housewives.
Yeah.
So the lunch area was right above the lake where Jaws is eating, you know, Jaws is repeating.
Yeah, yeah.
And these people, you know, they're coming through on the trams and they can see us eating lunch up there and they're like, oh, well, they think that we're very important people.
I forgot the Bates Motel is over there too.
Yep.
Oh God, there was one more anecdote I wanted to say. Oh yeah, so, you know, like I said, I've gotten into backpacking and, you know, I've gone to Yosemite and, you know, Zion and Arches in Utah and like still one of my favorite like POVs is looking up at the Warner Brothers water tower.
Pretty cool.
So, you know, my life is going well because that I'll always put that up on social media. That's like the one little breadcrumb I drop when I want to feel good about myself and like get that dopamine hit of like the Instagram likes.
Is it on the Sony lot where there's that?
The rainbow?
The rainbow.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a giant rainbow and it's hard to even get in one picture. You had to back way up.
That's also where they had, who knows, it's probably a replica, but they had an Ectomobile from Ghostbusters.
They've got a few of them there.
Stashed
I always take a picture with the Ecto.
It's like they say in sports, you like act like you've been there before, but like, man, fuck it, dude. It's the Ectomobile. Yeah, like I'm not going to not take a selfie with it.
Yeah.
Come on, then, dude. I'm not going to not touch the fucking thing.
Right. And then you're like, oh, it's Ghostbusters Day. Got this picture. Let's throw that out there today.
Well, Ghostbusters, the original is my favorite movie of all time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I couldn't forgive myself if I didn't indulge my fanhood a little bit.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Before we go any further, we did have, you know, one of the only nighttime breakfasts that I had.
Is that right?
Yeah. Okay. I went to Takaya. I think that was the first one. But we went to, I'm a big fan of Thai food. And when you said Thai food, I was like, yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
Rodded. R-O-D-D-E-D. It's kind of an unfortunate name. If you look at it, it's a cool name. But then when you try to tell people the name of it, it's really hard. You have to really pronounce it so they don't think you're saying rotted.
Rotten. Enunciate.
Yeah, rotted. And then they're like, wait, why is it called rotted? And then you're like, look, I don't know,
yeah,
man.
Do I own the place? No, I'm a patron. Yeah.
It's, you know, it's supposed to be one. It's in, I believe that's called Thai Town right there, right?
Yeah, I think it's like the western edge of Thai Town. Yeah. It might actually be the first Thai restaurant on that stretch of Hollywood Boulevard going eastward.
And then a couple blocks east of that, there's just a bunch of places.
Yeah.
But this place was very good. We had, one of their specialties was duck.
Yes.
And we both talked about, you know, we like some duck. It's a nice fatty meat.
Yeah.
And not a lot of places will have, like, we were able to just get, like, half a duck.
Yeah.
And it was kind of chopped up for us.
They stripped it off the bones. Yeah.
Which I prefer. Yeah, I mean, I would have gone ham
either way, but.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't want to have to. It would have been a lot messier if we had to, like, eat off the bone and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's valid, yeah.
But, yeah, it was, I mean, it was. I don't know. You really like the duck. What did you think of it?
It was great. Yeah, it was super tender. There was a lot of fat on it, mm-hmm. which honestly was kind of a little bit of a new experience for me. Not that
I have
duck often, but I didn't dislike that. I mean, yeah, great flavor. There was a little, you know, it came in like a little broth or something mm-hmm. and a little bit of just a few greens. Was that Chinese broccoli?
I don't think it was.
Okay.
You had the Chinese broccoli. That was in your pad see you.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It could have been just the leaves of it chopped up. I'm not sure.
Yeah. But yeah, it was great. It was a perfect little appetizer because it went quick, but we both got like a decent portion of the serving. Yeah.
Yeah. If you guys haven't had duck before, it does taste a lot like roast beef, I think. Not the skin.
Hmm.
The skin is like its own thing. You know, and I do like a crispy duck skin. This wasn't necessarily crispy. It still had good flavor.
Yeah.
If you're getting like a crispy duck skin, it's almost like when you get those chicharrones or the fried pork skin or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot like that. But yeah, it was very tasty. You had the pad see you.
Yeah, with beef.
And what is it? It's like is it a flat noodle?
Yeah, they just called them flat noodles.
Yeah.
That's basically why I ordered it, because I like ordering stuff that I can't make at home or I don't get at home. And I've never bought flat noodle.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, it's just a noodle. But I was like,
it might be hard to make, though.
I want an exotic noodle. So I went with the pad see you. Yeah. Usually I go for chow mein, but I was like, nah, let's do something different.
Now, is this the first time having pad see you?
No, not necessarily.
Okay. Usually it's the noodle. It's usually got some chopped up, like, scrambled egg in it and the Chinese broccoli, and it's in some kind of sauce.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What do you think of that Chinese broccoli?
I don't know. I mean, it's fine. It was that's not what jumped out to me flavor.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, to me, a lot of times it's very tart. So
it was just like a steamed vegetable.
Maybe they blanched it
to my recollection.
Yeah. To me, if I go to a Thai place and I want to look to see if, like, okay, how legit is this Thai place? I will look at the pad see you and if it doesn't tell me, I'll ask them, okay, do you have Chinese broccoli or is it just the regular broccoli? And if they have the regular broccoli, that's fine. I like regular broccoli. But then I'm like, the authenticness factor goes down for me because that's what it is. I like the Chinese broccoli a lot in pad see you. I've never really had it in anything else. I thought it was going to be kind of like cooking collard greens. I went to like this Chinese market and tried to buy some Chinese broccoli one time. And then I tried to make it at home. It was just the worst tasting thing. I was like, I don't know. I guess I should have looked up how to make it. It was an unmitigated disaster, inedible.
I have collard greens in my refrigerator right now.
Yeah.
I want to try to make some. So,
oh, that's cool. Yeah,
I might get to that this weekend, actually. Yeah.
Well, if you're successful at that, then you got to go try to find a recipe for like the Chinese broccoli and see what that is. I don't know. Well, I mean, maybe. I'm just saying, because I don't want to do it, John Druska.
Yeah. Let me get through.
I want to live vicariously through.
I'm inching my way through the leafy cruciferous greens.
That's cool.
So let me pace myself.
Well, if you're talking about the leafy cruciferous greens, what would be your top couple leafy cruciferous greens?
Oh, man, I don't know. I've been buying kale for a long time,
yeah.
and I kind of stopped because I don't know. I just want to do something different. I've been doing a balsamic and honey thing with mm-hmm. my Brussels sprouts lately,
yeah.
and I go broccoli. You know, I mean, what I really love are like bell peppers, mushrooms, broccoli, and onions.
Yeah.
Those are my big four yep. for almost anything I'm making at
Those
home.
Are great. Yeah.
So I'd have to say broccoli, I think, because
okay.
I'm consciously distancing myself from kale these days, but broccoli is a staple.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was eating a lot of kale for a while, and then I also have not been eating a lot of it lately. I don't know if I just got kind of burnt out on it or what.
I stopped making salads.
Yeah.
I used to make a ton of chicken salads,
yeah.
and now lately I just want like warm meals.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like diced potatoes, some veggies, and a protein. That's
yeah.
all.
I still will get like a kale Caesar. Like I'll go to like Tender Greens, get a kale Caesar, which is a Caesar with kale in it.
Yeah.
That's fine. It's covered with Caesar dressing.
Kale's good. I'm not yeah. dogging kale.
No, not at all.
I'm just taking a break.
Yeah. No, I got you. Well, you can't just cook the same stuff all the time. You get
right.
Like, yeah. So right now, so collard greens, you're trying to like perfect the collard greens right now?
Not even perfect, but just whip them up kind of the way they should be. You know,
yeah.
I found a couple recipes. I know that ham or bacon is usually mm-hmm. involved. And then there's various disputes about, you know, water versus chicken stock and,
oh.
you know, adding other spices or honey. I was in Oakland for a couple baseball games last year. The White Sox were playing the A's. And I ended up at this incredible Caribbean restaurant called Miss Ollie's.
Mm-hmm.
And I had like one of the best meals of my life. You know, potato salad, mac and cheese, the chicken, and the collard greens were like on a completely different level than
yeah.
I've ever had before. So I just want to get something that's like 1% of Miss Ollie's.
Yeah. Yeah. When you go to a place and you got like legit mac and cheese and greens, I mean, there's not much that's better than that.
The collard greens are always an afterthought when I get those
yeah.
types of platters.
Yeah.
And these were like...
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I almost just had like a drug flashback thinking yeah. about these collard
yeah.
greens.
When you have really good collard greens, it really stands out because
oh
like
God.
You said, a lot
I,
of
like,
time.
I'm looking at the street corner in Oakland I was sitting at when I ate those things.
Yeah.
I'm having like sensual flashbacks.
Well, now I'm going to have to get the...
I can feel the linoleum of the table. Okay. All right. I'm back. I'm in North Hollywood. Okay.
Nice. Let's see. What did I have? We're getting back to a rotten.
I want you to talk me through this egg situation you had yesterday.
Oh, got you. Well, I'm a big fan. There's certain dishes that you get. I mean, and it's a lot of Asian places. It's Thai. It's Filipino. Like, you'll get, like, some kind of dish, and then you'll add, like, an egg on top of it. A lot of times, they don't make it as runny of the egg as I want it to be.
Oh, yeah.
But to me, I love an egg. I had a crispy pork, so it's basically like fried pork diced up with a nice little sauce and some rice, and then there was a fried egg on top. But I actually asked for... I've never done this before. I was like, can I get an extra egg?
Oh, okay.
Because I always feel like there's not quite enough egg.
You ordered with the confidence and aplomb of someone who gets the extra egg frequently. That
yeah.
was your first time.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I was working my way up to it,
okay.
you know, and I'm like,
all right.
God, I can't act like this is the first time in front of John
exactly.
Druska.
Exactly. You got to act like you've been there before. We've been over this.
I got to have some aplomb. I mean.
yeah.
Otherwise, he's going to come on the show and say that you ordered it with no aplomb. And I cannot have someone saying I have no aplomb on this. Do you like plums?
I love plums.
Yeah.
I had one of the greatest things I ever ate was a plum in Paris.
Really?
Yeah. We went to Europe. My wife and I went to Europe a couple years ago, and the best meals, hands down, were in Italy. But some of the best individual ingredients were in
yeah.
France. And a plum and the brie in particular.
Oh, brie is really good. The first children's book that I had published was called A Plum in Paris. It was a series of haikus.
You had me for a minute. Not going to lie. You had me in the first half.
Wow. Brie is something I discovered just like a couple years ago. Now I'm just like, God, it's so good. It's very rich, though.
Yeah,
it's very,
yeah.
Very
you
rich.
Gotta, but, you yeah. got in sparing doses, mm-hmm. I think. But
now, is it? Are there? I don't even know. For the different, there probably are different variations of the plum. Is a plum in France the same as a plum if you get it over here? Does it taste different?
That's a good question. I don't know why this stood out. I think it might have just been the freshness. You know, they have standards for freshness, especially in France, that mm-hmm. are crazy. It's like part of their cultural identity. You know, there's rules about bread, you know, how fresh the bread has to be, how much bread can cost. I believe they intentionally keep the cost of bread down so everybody has access to the bread at least.
Well, that's interesting.
But I don't know. It was a smaller plum than usual. It wasn't like a big, like, it was not even the size of a golf ball. And it was, I don't know. It was just really good. I just remember it blowing my socks off.
Yeah.
It was a whirlwind European holiday, so.
Good plums are really good. I mean, I will, like, when it's, like, stone fruit season, definitely get some plums and some apricots and peaches and stuff like that.
This may be crazy. I'd probably go plum over peach.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What do you go, peach and apricot?
Apricots are fine. They're kind of cute. Yeah. They're almost sort of a novelty.
Yeah.
And I think they're blander than peaches.
Yeah.
So I got to go peach.
I got you. Gosh, when is stone fruit season coming around again? It's like summer, right?
I've never even considered the season. I don't know. If it's on the shelf, I'll get it.
Somebody told me that, and I just...
That'd be a good name for... I always loved thinking of... Anything that's a good name for a racehorse is also probably a good name for an improv team.
Oh, yeah.
Stone fruit season would be a great racehorse.
Yeah.
You know?
And down the strip they come.
Well, let me take you back to this egg, because... So that was...
You got two
fried eggs, right?
Yep.
They looked a little different. They looked... How was the yolk?
It wasn't as runny as I wanted it to
be. Okay, so I think they may have overdone the fry a little bit.
That is how they usually do it, though. There's not much yolk, and I always want... I should have told them. It's hard. You know, you don't want to, like, tell them to change it too much.
Yeah. The whites around the yolk were, you know, they looked like... They were kind of bubbly. They curled up a little bit. I want to say frazzled almost.
Yeah. It wasn't a pretty display of egg, is what you're saying. It tasted fine.
But I was wondering, I don't know, did they fry it in more oil than I'm used to? Was there a different cooking technique? I'm not even aware. They looked good as hell, but they looked different fried eggs.
They were not smooth.
Yeah, exactly. They were corrugated, perhaps.
Yeah, God, I don't know, man. That's not... I just, like, took it as like, oh, these eggs were just grew up in a bad neighborhood. They're rough.
Corrugated and coagulated.
Still tasted good. There was some yolk in there, but I prefer, like, the entire yolk. But yeah, it was still very good. I mean, got crispy pork, and then you got anything I can have like a runny yolk over, like eggs. It's kind of like that's kind of like my childhood, like Filipino food.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I'm an absolute freak. I could eat 13 pounds of anything, but I could eat that whole menu of that place. It's a very good restaurant. I would certainly recommend it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a great place. And, you know, I was telling you, there's a place by my house that's like recommended very highly. And we go there all the time. It's in our neighborhood. It's called Sri Siam. I'm not sure how to say it. It's the city Siam, which used to be the capital Siam back in the day. King of Siam. Anyway,
right.
Sri Siam. But the thing about Sri Siam is, they don't have any signature dish that I'm aware of. You know what I mean? Where I'm like, people come from miles around to get this. Now, the duck at Rotted, I think people come to get that duck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never thought of that. Is that the mark of like a restaurant? You got to have the one thing that no one else does better?
I think sometimes when it's like one of these, I guess what I'm saying is they're in Thai Town right there, right?
Yeah.
So how do you distinguish which one you go to? You know what I mean?
Valid.
There's got to be something where you're like, I got this. I got to go here to get this. Otherwise, I could just randomly pick because they're all probably good.
Yeah.
I haven't really talked about that before, and I hadn't thought about it that much, but that's what I was thinking when I saw that. I was like, oh, this duck really stands out because they have the roasted duck you can get, and they also have like a duck soup.
Yes.
Both of things that are not readily available, I don't think, in most places.
And the chef special was also some duck-related,
that's right.
Duck stew or something.
So, you know, so they're just like taking out ducks in that place, man.
I'm all for it, man. Duck, you know, whatever. If you're not into carnivorous lifestyle, that's fine, but like ducks taste really good.
Thank you for going there with me. Oh, we also went to Bon Canom Thai, which was, it looked a little bit like a general store.
Yeah, it wasn't strictly like a dessert or a pastry joint.
But they had a lot of desserts and pastries in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's interesting to me is like they had an abundance of desserts in there, right? And fried bananas. But at Rotted, and I don't know, maybe that's just the choice they made. Maybe they're expensive right now. Rotted was like, we don't have any bananas right now. We don't have any desserts. I was like, huh, that's interesting. Because then we went down to the street. It's like, they got all the desserts. So is this place just taking all the desserts and no one else can have them?
Maybe, yeah. I don't know. Maybe there's a plantain shortage in Thai Town.
I mean, but those fried bananas were really good.
Yeah, we got fried taro, too.
Fried taro. Taro root, which I told you, I only know that from playing the game Red Dead Redemption. Or Red Dead 2 and walking around gathering roots for like some kind of concoction.
That is a North American staple crop, yes.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. In like in the South, maybe, around New Orleans, Louisiana. That's what I feel like.
Okay.
Thank you for going to Rotted and
Bon Canom Thai.
Yeah, both of those places. They are both delicious. Before we get out of here, I also have to get three quick recommendations from John Dresca. What is a TV show or a film that you like that you think people, is it kind of a hidden gem that maybe people haven't seen?
Oh, hidden gem? Okay, I'm going to throw one at you here. There's this movie from 2012 starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt called Premium Rush, where he's a bike messenger in Manhattan.
Yeah.
Michael Shannon is the villain, and this movie is great. It's a 90-minute action crime thriller about bike messengers. I remember seeing the trailers and thinking, this doesn't look good. Mm-hmm. And even people hearing me describe it right now might be rolling their eyes. But I'm telling you, man, put this movie on. It's awesome.
All right.
It's great action. It's got a little bit of a sense of humor. JGL's not at the top of my list for anything, but he's good. You know, he's definitely a leading man hero. And Michael Shannon is at the top of my list for some things. So whenever you can see him just being villainous as hell, it's awesome. Premium Rush.
Yeah, just you saying those two together, it's sounds like a delightful combination of two actors working together. You know what I mean? Yeah. Just the way I know both of them go about their business acting.
It's one of those like kind of real time movies where it takes about, you know, they cheat a little bit, but it's a 90-minute runtime and the movie takes place in about 90 minutes.
Okay.
So there's a lot of like zipping back and forth and you know, running to opposite sides of town and then like different timelines intersecting different characters' points of view. It's cool.
Okay.
I'd recommend it.
Check that out.
Yeah.
What's the show or movie that you watch just for fun?
I'm watching Curb for the first time. I love The Office, but I think Seinfeld's the gold standard.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't go wrong with Seinfeld.
Look, it's one of those, it passes my test of almost any time I turn the channel and it's on, I just watched the rest of that episode. Yeah. I'm not turning the channel.
You know, the discussions we're having now around diversity and inclusivity, you know, that's some criticism that can fairly be placed on Seinfeld.
Yeah.
But another bar for me is always, does this translate from a technology standpoint? Mm-hmm. And it pretty much does.
Yeah.
They have a lot of bits where they're on payphones or there's a miscommunication because they can't reach one another. But I think most of it still translates.
Yeah.
So it's got to be Seinfeld. The Simpsons are also great. I grew up with The Simpsons.
Right.
But I think Seinfeld is... because it's live action, it's easier for me to, as you said, if I stumble into it, I'm instantly there.
Yeah. What is the show or movie that inspires you?
Dog Day Afternoon. I was going to say The Sopranos, which is great. I love James Gandolfini, but I saw Dog Day Afternoon last year for the first time, and it basically skyrocketed Pacino to the top of my list.
Yeah.
I think some people consider him histrionic or over the top or kind of a caricature of himself, but his stuff in the 70s, he's so sensitive, he's so vulnerable, he's soft-spoken. Dog Day, it's a great crime, you know, heist film based on real events. John Cazale, who's got an incredible story, is also in it. It's Pacino at his best, and he runs the gamut. He's also a maniac. That's the Attica sequence It's Always Sunny made fun of eventually.
Yeah,
it was crazy. I was glued to the TV watching this movie because, you know, there's plenty of old movies that are good. But, you know, a movie that's 50 years old from the 70s, sometimes it's a little hard to, you know, sometimes the emotions don't translate.
Yeah.
And Dog Day is flawless and Pacino is incredible. You have to watch it if you haven't seen it and you're an actor.
All right. Yeah. No, it's a great movie. Look, I'm a little, you're from the Chicago area. I'm a little disappointed that you didn't say the movie The Sting, which is the greatest movie of all time.
I should probably watch The Sting one of these days.
Oh, you've never seen The Sting?
Not cover to cover.
No. Great movie. Dog Day Afternoon, though, also a classic.
Yeah.
A lot of those 70s movies kind of hold up, you know?
Yeah.
The acting is so great. I don't think you did. I don't think you did.
Another great sleeper real quick is The Conversation with Gene Hackman.
That's
great,
really good.
Great flick. Yeah. Coppola made between the two Godfathers.
Really?
I believe so, yes.
That's
you know
crazy.
Who else is in The Conversation? John Cazale.
Yeah, sometimes you see these movies that people make back to back and you're like, This is crazy.
The dude was, it's tragic. He passed away very early. The dude was only in 5 movies and they were all nominated for Best Picture.
Wow. That's a legacy.
Yeah. He's right crazy. Yeah.
Jeez. Well, thanks for those recommendations. Those are all great.
Yeah.
Guys, if you'd like to get more Brentfast stuff, such as pics of John Druska and I enjoying our Brentfast from Rotted Tie, go to my website, brentpope.com. You can listen to all the Brentfast episodes there. You can see clips from all my TV appearances in the official Brentfast store with a bunch of fun stuff. Shirts, mugs, stickers, masks, John Druska Moon County action figures, guys. Only 8 left. People of Earth, do yourself a favor by picking up something from the Brentfast store. And if you enjoy the show, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to Brentfast. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any new episodes. Brentfast is being enjoyed all over the United States and in 52 countries across the globe. So trust me about Breakfast Burrito Brigade. We are just getting started. Special thanks to my studio engineer, Marco Leon, at the fabulous Tiny Studio LA, tinystudioLA.com, for making me sound so good. John Druska, what's next for you and where can we find you on social media?
Social media, I'm on Instagram, Mr. Druska, MisterDruska. And what's next for me is yet to be determined.
Yeah.
I'm auditioning. I'm still grinding. I'm constantly writing something. So wrapping up a multicam pilot and a feature comedy script. Just got to keep working.
Cool, man. Well, it was really great. Look, full disclosure, John and I, you know, used to work at the same club, see each other all the time, and then it's been years since we've seen each other.
Yeah, it's been a little while.
And, you know, sometimes you see someone, you're like, God, I missed hanging out with this dude. He's so... John Druska is one of the funniest people that I know. And I know 3 funny people. No, but seriously.
Thanks?
Yeah. Great having food with you, discussing food with you, and talking about all of our creative journeys, stuff like that.
Yeah, I appreciate the invitation. It's truly humbling and an honor to get to come here and chat with you.
Excellent. Well, that was a weird response.
Gotcha. I threw him off with my
what is happening? I could edit all this out, but I won't.
Emotional truth.
And with that, we put another double fried egg on top of crispy pork episode of Brentfast with Brent Pope in the Ultigo bag. See ya.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.